You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Well, it's Sunday night. It's a beautiful night here at the PWK Airport. Mark, doesn't it look like there's a spirit in the sky out there with the sunset?
Is that what that's called?
Yeah, it looks like it.
All right, we'll do it. You know, I realize now how much I miss you when you go flying away and aren't part of the show because I don't cue up these great songs that you do.
Oh, I miss you too, though.
That's not nice. Oh, no, we're starting that conversation again. Let's not go there.
Yeah. Well, hey, this is a, it's called classic rock. I think it was from your era.
I was going to say, look at you, young man. I've got like 30 years on you. I can teach you a thing or two about this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure, was it bell-bottom shorts or bell-bottom pants and stuff?
Bell-bottom shorts.
That would be awkward. That would be really awkward.
I think they called those culottes, but anyway. So did you tell me that you remembered your mother today on Mother's Day?
I did, and I have to give you a little credit for that.
Wait, don't tell her. Go ahead. You've already let the cat out of the bag. Yeah. Why do you have to give me credit?
Well, you called me this morning at 8 in the morning and said, don't forget to call your mother for Mother's Day. And we were talking, you didn't say that. You said that you were getting ready to take your mother out because it was Mother's Day.
Right.
Which then prompted me, oh, it is Mother's Day.
You had no clue, did you?
I didn't know what day it was, so I really, to be honest.
Such a good son. Mrs. Waterloo, I just want you to know, I was thinking about you.
that sounds weird. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Let's put the reversers on this thing.
We'll go backwards on these things. Speaking of reversers, I got to fly on a DC-9 yesterday. And, you know, I love, like, I sat next to the engine, and you look outside, you can see back, and, like, the reversers, the buckets or the clamshells or whatever you want to call them, open up. I like those.
I used to fly DC-9. As a matter of fact, we were talking at dinner tonight. We mentioned Ozark Airlines. They flew the Fairchilds, F-227s.
27, yeah.
Yeah, and the DC-9s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matter of fact, a little bit of trivia, I got to sit left seat in St. Louis Lambert at the flight safety DC-9 simulator because my buddy was getting checked out in the right seat as an FO.
Really?
Yeah, it was like midnight. He said, you want to come along? And he got permission. I sat in the left seat. I wasn't allowed to touch anything.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was very different than the simulators we have today.
Yeah.
Because it was just like the arch was just a row of lights. There wasn't the scenery that we have now.
Right. It didn't look like Flight Simulator.
No, it didn't look like Microsoft Flight Simulator either.
Hey, well, that's still a really great experience.
Oh, it was. You know, I was a young man, probably as old as you are now. It was back in it had to be around 1980. Maybe in the late 70s.
Very nice. Yeah. Oh, man. Great times. I like it.
Yeah. It was,
absolutely.
And I've flown a 777 sim since.
Yeah.
I did.
Actually, the very first time I met you, you pulled that video out. I think you must have just gotten back from that trip or something.
That might have been.
That's cool. I mean, not many people get to go in there. And then you could probably vouch for it's nearly, you know, it's like you're actually in the thing.
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, I was had the pleasure of watching a real 777 captain going through some recurrent training, and they did some kind, I don't even know what it was, probably a stall, but the thing went almost inverted, and obviously the box we were in did not invert, but my brain told me we were over the wing over, right?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. And so it's so realistic and so cool.
It is. There was actually a point when I was doing going through the simulators for my airline training down in St. Louis. They had a my sim partner actually threw up the first time they started relocating, you know, because they can relocate you on different parts of the runway or the airport. But he was looking outside, and you know, the hydraulic set, you move around, you know, the simulator moves in a direction that's like opposite of what you see is going on outside, and it really just screws you up, and he threw up.
That has to be embarrassing.
That was. We had to do a, they had to get the simulator maintenance out there to air it out, to be kind about it. But yeah, those simulators are pretty cool. I like them a lot.
Yeah. Although, and I might have told you the story, that week, I'll never forget, I got to fly a 777 simulator. I got to sit right seat and fly, actually take the controls of a PC-12.
Yeah.
And I also flew my SR-22. The highlight of the week was flying the SR-22.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Wow.
Because it was me, definite left seat. I knew what I was doing, or at least I thought I did. And to me, it was just, this was what I love about GA. I mean, it was a great experience to fly the PC-12. It was a great experience to fly the 777 sim, but it wasn't my SR-22.
You love that airplane.
I do love that airplane.
It's a great airplane.
Yeah. Well, look at you this week. I know we're going to have to do a separate show on it, but for all our listeners, Al had a dream week, and everyone all week was saying, boy, don't you wish you were Al Waterloo right now? Because you had the pleasure and the privilege of transporting an SR-22 from Duluth, Minnesota. That's not the exciting part. Down to Chile.
Yeah.
I mean, how long did that take?
That was an interesting trip, and it took 26 hours of flying time.
Those are big fuel tanks.
Yeah. I'll say that I did have to pee in a bottle once.
Oh, thanks for sharing. I didn't need to know that.
Yeah.
That's Cirrus is new. In the G5, don't they have the pilot relief tubes like they do in the Navajos?
They do not, but that would be a nice thing to have.
Well, no, let's just say they do, because I don't want a visual of the other one.
we'll save that for the show.
You know, we won't even save that one. That one won't come back.
We'll flush
please.
That one down the toilet for all intents and purposes. But yeah, no, it was cool. It took 26 hours of flying time, and we ended up, it took 4 days to get down there. So it was a great trip.
Well, I was afraid because you had let us know you would be taking your personal spot GPS receiver.
Yeah.
So all I saw was, gosh, it still has him up actually you didn't start it till you were down there at Key West.
Right.
And I thought he's not going to turn it on, because every time I pulled it up, it showed like Melrose Park, Illinois. I go, no, he's down. He's flying. I want to watch this. So we got a little bit of flight aware going to watch you, but definitely several of us were following you every moment of the day. It was so cool.
Yeah, it was a cool trip, and I'm excited to talk about it.
It's cool to see you over Cuba, too, on a spark reel.
I tell you what, that was something else to be flying over Cuba. It's like, you know, that was my first time really over Cuba or near Cuba, and, you know, what you learn in history class is a third grade American, and you're just like flying over this place, and it's like, whoa, you know. But
yeah,
it's really that there's one thing that really surprised all of us that went down, and that was like how integrated all of the air traffic control system was, you know, with based on relationships and, you know, country feuds and stuff like this. You would never know it based on the air traffic control system.
They didn't fire at you too many times?
No.
Missiles?
They missed. No, just kidding. That's the one thing the new Cirrus has is a chafe system.
Yeah, right.
No, but no, seriously, it's like you get down towards Key West and you start hearing Miami Center say, you know, Aeroflot, blah, 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 contact Havana Center and this and that. And, you know, there were people, while I was on Havana Center, just a quick little anecdote here, I guess, but, you know, you hear Delta coming up from, you know, Jamaica or something like that, and they're already talking to Havana Center, and they're going to JFK or something like that, and they said, hey, can we get direct Armel, which is Washington Dulles, the VOR at Washington Dulles. And Havana Center's like, yeah, clear direct Armel, you know.
Yeah, what do they care?
Yeah,
right. Just don't hit anything.
Exactly. So, you know, and, you know, vice versa, you know, Miami Center was clearing people to intersections in Cuba's airspace, and yeah, it was just, you would hardly know it.
And the accents were too heavy, you could understand clearly?
Yeah, the accents were fine. You know, there were some, you could tell where Americans were, had a big presence in some of these countries that you went. And, you know, some definitely had a, you know, thick accent. But, you know, as far, it wasn't anything that, you know, you would, you know, outside of any type of normal operation have, you know, any problem understanding or complying with.
That's cool. We, you know, I'd like to try that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, matter of fact, you talked about us doing a flyout that would be kind of interesting. Why don't you tell everyone what we're planning?
Yeah. Well, now that, the process has begun, we're going to be flying a flyout from, the Chicago area here down to the Grand Cayman Islands.
How cool is that? How many clubs do that?
maybe the
Key West Club. I don't know.
I don't, there's got to be a club out there that does it. But, you know, from here in Chicago, that's a pretty big trip.
Oh, it's huge. Matter of fact, maybe we should try and go just to Joliet, Illinois first and see if we can use that as a stepping
stone. See if we can make it. Yeah, right. We can leave the pattern. No, but that, I mean, that was pretty funny.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was kind of a funny little joke.
Yeah, Joliet?
Yeah, let's go to Joliet instead.
Okay, I'll take that. Is that my SNC?
Yeah, that was a poor lead-in to...
Oh, no.
Let's knock it out of the park tonight.
All right, I'll try. This one was tough. But, you know, I went to a bar with another pilot and stepped away to take a bio break. And when I came back, I saw my GA pilot buddy was sitting at a bar there, and this really beautiful woman came up to him, and she said, hey, handsome, want to play a game? And he thought she was interested, and then it became very, very clear that maybe she earned a living doing this, if you catch my drift.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So she says, you want to play a game? Here's how it works. For $300, if you give me $300, I'll do anything you want as long as you can say it in three words.
Wow.
Yeah. So I like the way he thinks on this. He pulled out his wallet and laid down three crisp $100 bills, and he looked at her and he said, wash my plane.
Yeah, there they are. I knew they would come out. It's perfect. I love it. I mean, yeah, nice job on that one. I like that. That was a good one.
All right, good. I'm glad you liked it.
You got the plane all shiny.
Yeah. And $300, usually it costs more than that.
Yeah, exactly. It does. But hey, I got a, something came up at dinner.
And, yeah, I remember I smelled that burp.
Yeah. Yeah, that was teriyaki chicken.
Oh, okay, yeah, take it away.
Yeah. So something came up at dinner today, and we had a conversation, and it really sparked me, and it brought up the question of whether or not training can be done in glass, or stick and rudder flying can be taught in glass panel airplanes.
Doesn't seem like much of a debate to me.
So what do you think of? What do you think about it?
What does the panel have anything to do with stick and rudder skills?
That's a good question.
That's my job. Yeah, I fly more the Avidyne. I've flown the G1000. Obviously, I fly some Steve and Gage airplanes too. If anything, the only thing I see is a little bit different is my scan feels different on this old six pack versus the, and again, I'm mostly flying the Evinine Integra, but I don't understand what that has to do with my stick and rudder skills. It's more my scan skills.
Yeah. So is there, so that's your scan skills, but mm-hmm. how about needle ball and airspeed? Needle ball and airspeed skills. Can you teach that, like, you know, flying a crosswind or landing in a crosswind? Or, you know, avoiding a slip or a skid or something, that base turn to final. Can you teach effective pilot skills, airmanship, in a G1000?
Yeah, I mean,
or a glass panel.
Obviously, the ball looks a little different, but you still have your turn coordinator and all that. You're the CFI. I'm not. Yeah. I would think as a student, I can learn just fine. Regardless, right? It's not gonna impact, and especially if most of that's VFR, I should have my head out the window anyway.
Yeah. So what's your official stance on it?
You can't. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's, yeah, if a G1000 pilot and a, steam gauge pilot shouldn't impact their skills whatsoever.
Yeah. So I guess that makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like you are remaining neutral.
Neutral? I guess it's probably neutral, but at the same time, I think I'm very much saying you can. I can answer that question you asked with a very positive yes. I got my license in the 70s, long before people even thought about steam or glass panels. And then I got back in 2004, picking up with a GPS equipped, and then soon thereafter, glass panel archer.
Right.
And to me, it was really the same. My skills were, the skills I needed were still the same.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that it's an educational issue. You know, I don't really think that there's many airplanes you could buy with normal six packs in them now. You know, brand new ones at least.
I would tend to agree. Even the LSAs or the Homebolts, they're all put in some kind of either Aspen or some form of what we would call glass, certainly TAA.
Right, yeah, TAA. And, you know, you have, some are better than others, but I think that, you know, the way that the airplanes have evolved, so therefore the teaching needs to evolve, to accommodate that. And it's very interesting, you know, just flying around here in Chicago. Actually, I flew with one pilot, he was actually quite refreshed, like looking outside the airplane, you know, rather than looking for, you know, looking on the TCAS for traffic and pulling up the METAR and, you know, looking for this, the airspace rings, rather than, you know, just looking outside and doing all that stuff yourself, you know, it was quite refreshing.
So that's a different question, right? There's the stick and rudder skills, but the skill of head out the window versus inside the cockpit.
Right.
That's different because I find myself looking for traffic and flying somewhat, if you will, defensively there's like three people at my 11 o'clock. I'm looking on my MFD. I find myself turning right just to be away from them. And I don't know that that's a bad thing, but certainly my head's not outside the cockpit at that point.
See, I think that now if you're training as a primary student, right?
Right.
And if, I think it's an instructor's job to make that balance, right? You know, it's very easy to get in there and just say, hey, this is great. This is, this is an awesome piece of equipment. Let's look at it. I'll show you what this does. This does this. So you spend your whole lesson inside on a screen and you know, the whole effectiveness of the lesson is taught by looking at the glass rather than necessarily outside of the airplane. And, you know, you have all these distractions in front of you and, being able to teach a student to look beyond that, I think it's a pretty difficult part because there's all this, you know, it's like a, you know, the student is like a barracuda. They're attracted to shiny, sparkly things. And, you know, they have, you know, all this beautiful, you know, data in front of them, you know, so it's easy to look at it.
Yeah. No, it's to your point, and this actually is probably one of my most scary moments. I was in I think it was the Archer. I was with a flying buddy and we were messing around with all the avionics. And then we look up and we see, you know, a block and a half away at our altitude, a Skyhawk. I mean, it was our altitude. It was crossing in front of us, and it was an oh my God moment. Well, it wasn't oh my God. that was close. And it was both of us were just kind of playing with a GPS in Chicago airspace at low altitude.
Right.
It was stupid on our part.
Yeah.
Right. And there's the danger, because you can get the shiny object, if you will, kind of grabbing your attention and taking it off what you should be focused on, especially in the Chicagoland area near so many airports.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think you end up having too much. There's a lot of distractions in the Chicago area. And, you know, at some point that, you know, the screens itself become a distraction, just like you said. You know, but one thing that I wanted to start doing, and I got to look to make sure that this is okay to do, but is to turn all the screens off for primary training, you know, and just go off the standby instruments. And then until when it's ready to, you know, the screen should come online, you know, at some point throughout the training. That way, you know, the screens are there, but they're black and they're not displaying anything. And then you can just go out and fly.
Right. Although, you know, what's interesting, I remember someone, I was flying with a CFI and we were just out flying together, and he went ahead and darkened my screens.
Yeah.
And it was funny. My reaction was not what I had hoped. It wasn't, okay, well, I'll just dial in 113.0 on the nav and fly to the Northbrook VOR, come back here. It was not panic, but a sense of, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Where am I? You know, I started asking all those questions.
Right.
Where in the old days, I would have known where I was at all times. Now I was abdicating that responsibility. I just look at the MFD. I could see what ring I'm in. And so when it went out on a moment's notice, I had no idea where I was.
Right.
Exactly. And that was kind of a wake-up call for me.
That is kind of a wake-up call.
Yeah. Kind of a wake-up
call. Kind of a wake-up call.
Yeah.
It's nice. But, yeah, I think that, you know, I guess to stay on a neutral ground, that, yeah, you can teach it, teach these, you know, basic stick and rudder skills in a cockpit that's equipped with technically advanced equipment. But it takes the right instruction to be able to learn it.
And I would say, and this is not meant as anything negative to today's youth or today's pilot, but everyone expects technology.
Right.
You know, if I said, let's go learn math, and I gave you a slide rule, you'd think I was pretty nuts, right? At the very least, you'd expect a calculator.
Right, right.
And when I was a kid, there was no such thing as a calculator. Actually, the Bomar calculator, $180, and it did four functions. Plus, minus, multiply, and divide was the first one that came out.
That's it?
That was it. $180 for a Bomar.
Wow.
And, but yeah, we had slide rules, but it'd be silly. You know, you can't teach someone today. That doesn't make sense. And I'd say the same thing for flying.
Yeah.
They expect the technology, and it brings hopefully it'll help bring the youth into aviation, because that's what we need to do, is bring them in.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, it's good. I think you can play definitely to the strengths of all this. And, you know, I think it's certainly very cool, you know, and the new pilots that are coming in are certainly not going to have, you know, as many opportunities to train in six-pack, you know, steam gauge instrument airplanes. You know, it's going to be a while till they're completely, you know, gone. But, yeah, I think there's going to be more opportunities now to fly glass than not. And, hopefully the instruction changes. But, you know.
It will, yeah. Because as the young instructors come on. But you know what? I guess the bottom line is, it's going to go back to the age old thing of matching a student with the right instructor, because there's all kinds of students and all kinds of instructors. And
exactly.
And never the twain will they meet, or whatever that old saying was.
Yeah.
They shall meet. You know what? Save me. I'm not going anymore with that thought.
Well, good. No, that's good. Yeah. But, you know, there's one town that has been in this show that's been referenced quite a bit.
I know what town that is.
What one is it?
I think it's St. Louis.
Yeah. How about that?
I noticed that. All of a sudden we didn't even talk about our flyout a few weeks ago at St. Louis, but we've mentioned St. Louis a few times. I lived there for 7 years in the, when was that, late 70s to the mid 80s.
Yeah.
And my brother still lives down there, so I make it down there every now and then, but it has come up.
Yeah, it sure has. There's a lot of you did a lot of flying. You did some training. I did a lot of airline training down there. Which some of it was at flight safety, some of it was at the old TWA.
It isn't flight facility. Safety anymore, is it?
Yeah.
Is it that with the sim? I thought maybe it was taken over by something by now.
Yeah. No, but it's a pretty heavy hitting, aviation town.
Yeah. I was surprised how much Spirit of St. Louis has changed from when I was there. It was nothing then, and it's a pretty amazing place right now.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. But there's another special connection to St. Louis.
Tell me more, oh wise one.
Well, St. Louis has been kind of, like we said, it was a great aviation town. It's a great, airplane.
Spirit of St. Louis.
Yeah, Spirit of St. Louis. Airplane manufacturers, McDonnell Douglas, now Boeing. And,
I used to watch, by the way. I hate to digress, and I'm still, when I was there, I would go, first of all, that was obviously before all the 9/11 stuff, so I'd hang out in the control tower. You could do that in those days.
Nice.
But more important is I would go over to the McDonnell Douglas parking lot and take pictures of their planes and take pictures of the Ozarks and TWAs taking off and landing. I remember getting a security cop come in and he took my camera away from me.
Really?
He said, "You can't be here. This is private property." I said, "I'm here all the time." So I said, "Please don't throw my camera away." They took the film out. And they gave me my camera back, and then I said, I'd really like those pictures. And they sent me every picture of a commercial airline, but anything of the F-15s or whatever else making down there, I never saw. They kept those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just a young kid, though. You know what I mean? I was in my early 20s, but I loved hanging out at Lambert back then.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. It's a pretty cool airport, and we had to fly out there, which was nice.
I still don't think we were supposed to fly through the arch like we did.
I hope you got rid of those pictures.
Yeah, right. Like, I've already changed the tail number.
Yeah. Right. Excellent. But do you remember any old airlines that were based out of St. Louis?
Well, again, I always think of my buddy. He was flying for Ozark.
Yeah.
That was before they were acquired by TWA, before they were acquired by American. Was there anyone else? That was the only one I remember back then.
I guess you could say TWA.
Well, I thought that was Kansas City. Oh, Kansas City was their hub, maybe. That was it.
Kansas City was it was their second hub. TWA was their, their big airport. But there's another airline.
Tell me more.
It's up and coming, and it's been around for a while, but now we're really starting to make headway. But Air Choice One Airlines.
Air Choice One, I actually have heard of them.
Excellent. Excellent. But our guest tonight, is the president and, CEO of, Air Choice One, Mr. Shane Storrs, and he's with us tonight. And, thank you so much for coming and joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Alan and Mark. It's, good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I have to ask the question. I know you live in St. Louis. You're sitting in our studio here in Chicago Executive. Thank you, Signature Flight Support, for hosting us. So how did you get here?
Air Choice One Airlines.
There you go. I love that. It's kind of like the guy with the Remington shavers. I liked it so much I bought them place.
Exactly. Well, that's great. So that's really neat. You know, St. Louis is a pretty cool, you know, aviation towns, we said, but you've grown up in the St. Louis area, and you've been a part of the aviation scene for quite a while down there. Do you want to give us a little history on what Air Choice One is?
Yeah. We got a page of history here.
Well, I brought the whole story timeline, but Multi-Aero Inc. is the corporation that was formed in 1979 with a crop dusting helicopter and a Cessna 150. And, basically through the years, a lot of history here. If you guys we brought a timeline for you to look at and ask questions if you'd like, but
yeah, absolutely.
All the way through, current today, we've got a lot of things that's taken place, with growth and being diverse. And basically in the mid 2000s, 2000, we started a charter program called Share Flight that turned us into getting an airline started a few years later, sort of by default. But the history of the company basically was was on-demand charter, both passenger and cargo, and some scheduled cargo in there for many years with large corporations such as UPS. But the name Air Choice One, we talked a little bit about earlier. Basically, we had a company that we purchased another fixed base operation down at the Lake of the Ozarks, Osage Beach, K-15, Kilo-15.
Yeah.
In 1993, and we grew that into a nice, larger fixed base operation that we purchased from the previous owner, on 3,200 feet. We did scenic flights and banner towing and flight instruction and fuel sales and the whole fixed base operation thing. We did so good that by 1998, the city of Osage Beach decided they would like to have their airport back.
Yeah.
So they took over the operation, and the name of the operation we had down there was called Air Lake Aviation.
Yeah.
Of course, we branded the name Air Lake Aviation, so the city of Osage Beach, part of the deal was that they take the name Air Lake Aviation. So what we had to do is take that corporation that Air Lake Aviation was in and rename it. So we named it Air Choice One.
Nice.
So not knowing that Air Choice One was going to become the airline name someday, but basically Air Choice One was, it was Air Choice One Inc. because it was a corporation, started out as a 10,000 square foot hangar in Farmington, Missouri, as you see there, as we built on our timeline in 98 through 2001. Things progressed in our charter world with ShareFlight that we started in a charter program back in 2000. We had done so well with the ShareFlight program that we had been questioned, gotten questioned by the FAA about what we were doing, which we hadn't been doing anything wrong, but we was told or decided to go for schedule authority, which took about 3 to 4 years. And while doing that, we needed to come up with a airline name. So we had our employees at the time, which we had about 40 at the time, come up with some ideals. And basically everybody kept coming back to Air Choice One.
Nice.
Which was already used in our Farmington facility. So we, adopted the Air Choice One name, dropping the ink to brand it as our up and coming, scheduled service, which that's what we call ourselves today, Air Choice One. So that was the development of how we got the name Air Choice One.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's who would have thought, a simple corporation name, some years back now is the name of the airline. I like that.
Well, and we have seen so many airlines come and go, relatively recently, and then to see your heritage and your history starting in 1979, and to be here so many years later, it's pretty cool. It's kind of like maybe one of the best kept secrets around.
Well, what we call it is endurance in the industry. you gotta have a passion. As you guys know, being pilots and pilots out there listening, you definitely gotta have the DNA of wanting to be in this great business of aviation.
Yeah, right.
And, first the passion.
You mean it's not to become rich?
Well, I haven't seen that yet. Al may have. I don't know. He's the corporate pilot here.
Yeah, so. I'm just driving a used Honda. That's all.
Right. Yeah, but it's a very good Honda. Yeah.
But no, a lot of hard work, persistence, endurance, and this excitement about building a legacy has kind of kept us our attention through the challenges of our company. It's been a lot of ups and downs as any type of business trying to grow.
Sounds like an airplane joke coming. Ups and downs. But anyway, I digress.
We've been very excited about being able to continue to build the main thing is to build a legacy in schedule operations. So we mainly took 100% of our attention and we're gearing it toward focusing on the scheduled operations of the company. We still maintain some charter operations, but mainly the schedule operations, what we focus on today. So, currently Air Choice One services, the two hub cities of Chicago O'Hare, which is awesome, and, St. Louis Lambert. And, with the communities right now, Burlington, Iowa, Decatur, Illinois, and Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Yeah, as deregulation came in and we saw, just as I alluded to, airlines go away. And you see the cities where the airlines have pulled out. So this is really important that these cities that maybe used to have more scheduled traffic, they need something. And so organizations like yours really are saving them in a sense, right?
Well, what we feel, you know, being a family-owned and operated business for all these years is these small communities, you know, who made America?
Right.
Know, small town.
Right, right.
Industry. So we feel there's a draw for us, for some of these communities we're servicing, to, you know, build back up, not to reinvent the wheel, if you will, but find our niche that can be profitable in these communities, medium, small communities that don't have hub service, but try to rebuild the train station, if you will, the old, Ozark type mentality, point to point.
Right.
Just in rural communities. And Chicago, we feel having the Chicago Hair as part of that piece is going to bring us a lot of potential for the future because you got over 1,300 flights a day available, you know, out of Chicago as a hub. So if we can get the small communities into, you know, a hub such as Chicago, we feel that we can have great success for connecting these rural communities. The other thing that we found coming from a small town ourselves, hometown, the first original base was Festus, Missouri. It's about 30 miles south of St. Louis. And what we found going around, traveling around, trying to build the schedule operations is the connectivity to the airline transportation system is really important to these rural communities because of industry, economic development. You know, they need the ports. One of the first questions that's usually asked to the IDA people of these communities, the economic development people, is, do you have scheduled airline service? And
right.
When you can check that box in a community, you know, that's a viable avenue to have, or a piece to have, to bring, you know, jobs to back, you know, into the communities.
Sure.
For industry or whatever the company might be. But so we're really excited to be able to be a part of that, to keep rural America alive, if you will. You know, we are focusing to the smaller cities that either had service at one time or been abandoned, you know, by the partners of the legacies. And so we're excited to see what we can do in that aspect.
Definitely. I think that, you know, you look at like the cities like Decatur and Burlington, you know, these cities are, I mean, you fly over them and that you could spot them 100 miles away at night, you know, so that their lights glow bright, you know, they're big spots on the map. And, you know, when I was working in Champaign as a ticket agent, for Mesaba Airlines, they had, you know, you'd see where people would check in from, and people would literally drive, you know, had to drive 3 hours away from, you know, to drive to Champaign, which was the closest commercial airport.
Right.
And get in and, you know, fly away and connect through Detroit or wherever it was going that day. And, there's definitely a neglected community out there that needs that. And I don't think that the thought of having, you know, airline service to attract a corporation for new business and things like that never would have, you know, occurred to me to think about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, and I know even in the GA world, when we talk about just even having an airport to attract a corporation, I mean, many of them have their own corporate departments, but this idea of scheduled is something that I had forgotten as well. That's got to be a key thing.
Yeah, it's pretty important. One of the things I'm asked, it's many a time as we go through these communities and even outside the communities, people ask, well, Shane, what makes you think you can, you know, grow these communities and passenger numbers? And the answer that we usually give is that, I just probably know that it can't be done, you know. So
yeah.
I just don't know it can't be done. So I just keep working harder to progress to accomplish something. So we're really excited about the numbers we're doing in our communities. We're on target this year to be around 50,000 passengers,
nice.
Carrying about 50,000 passengers and 8-seat aircraft. So
wow.
That's a lot of flights.
Yeah.
So
what, tell us about your fleet. I mean, we got so many pilots out there. They're probably thinking, what does he fly?
We operate the, Cessna Caravan Grand Cargo, Masters, not cargo. The, Cessna Grand Caravans.
Right.
I'm thinking cargo here from the old days. And we have a Piper Navajo Chieftain right now. So, the Grand, Caravan is really a utility, reliable, dependable, over, 12 million hours and counting.
Wow.
The Pratt & Whitney engine is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
The PT6, totally reliable. To such a point that we're getting fleet extensions on our engines, with the TBO extensions.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be up to 4,600 here shortly.
Wow.
The manufacturer's at 3,600. So we're proud of that. So that tells us that we're maintaining the aircraft in a safe manner as far as the engine. So we get them, the FAA approves those extensions, through the manufacturer, Pratt & Whitney. So
that's cool. Now, you mentioned the ups and downs, the changes. We see the timeline in front of us. Yet you talked about leaving a legacy that suggests to me that your vision of what you can become has had to change. Maybe not significantly, you'll have to tell me, but how has your vision of what you're building changed, and where does it stand currently in terms of where you want to take this?
Well, a lot of, like you said earlier, there's been a lot of airlines come and go, and I'd like to be one to leave a legacy. I don't want to be a statistic, but we're going to do our best to make that not happen. But we believe that just the dedication we have to our communities that we service, not to get to a point that we don't know who the customer is anymore. So it's mainly trying to keep that niche and the small, have this small company mentality, but yet big service. And to reach into to where we get the customers or the passengers, coming back repeatedly, to where we build the numbers such that we can make the next move, as a regional carrier into larger aircraft. The goal is, for our company is to try to get into the turboprop. The jet market is great. A lot of the regional partners went, or legacy partners moved into the jets and found mm-hmm. that it's very expensive. So we want to, control our costs as we grow, to just find that odd niche that the legacies and their partners really can't do anymore because it's just cost prohibitive. So we're trying to get to where we're to a point in the communities that we've got the ridership to reach the next level of aircraft to sustain the service, but hold on to the reliability, dependability. What we found in these rural communities that we've serviced is it's like the bus stop. If the bus doesn't stop or the bus breaks down so many times, people start walking or driving or whatever. So it's really key to our success is to be there when we say we're going to be there. And that's a lot of what's happened with the older partners of the legacies is that they get so big, it was cost prohibitive to service these small communities. Mm-hmm. They just pretty much, put them down on the lowest list possible in their network, to say, well, if we stop at Decatur today, we'll make it. If we don't, no big deal. And, we want to focus, the customers is the most important piece of success.
Right.
Is repeated customers. So we want to make sure that we hold on to what our roots were growing up in the charter. The slogan that we used in the charter world was when hours count. And that made a lot of, new customers come and use us and try us. And when they saw the reliability and dependability, we did what we said we was going to do time-wise. We had them for the whole duration. So we're hoping that we can build that in the passenger, scheduled passenger world and just grow numbers to a point of being a great airline.
So when you, continue to fly Burlington, Decatur, and so on and so forth, do you find that your passenger is the same person, just a very loyal one, or are you picking up new passengers, beyond?
Yeah, we basically do have both. We have repeated and we do have news. When we originally started, We'll use Decatur as an example. They were averaging, you know, 1,500 passengers for the whole year with the previous carriers. And what we've taken it over now, it's coming to well over 15,000 passengers in a year.
Wow.
So we feel that we're holding on to the repeated customers as well as building new ones. So, you know, the goal there is to get numbers around 25,000-30,000. And, you know, people tell me it's a pipe dream, but I think we're already gaining customers from Champaign and Springfield and Bloomington, and Decatur because of our reliability and, of course, pricing and in the hub, you know, being Chicago and St. Louis. So we're excited, you know, about drawing, you know, from the legacy or from the regional partners even, you know, from Champaign. It's awesome. So, you know, it's very competitive, in the airline industry. You know, American Airlines, if you price your ticket at, you know, $200, round trip, say Chicago, St. Louis, then American Airlines comes in at, you know, $190. So it gets very competitive. You know, they try to squeeze out, you know, the small guy, but, we hope that, the niche that we want to build that the legacies don't look at, they don't care about, and their partners, because there is a need for the type of service that we want to build. And, you know, there's a break even point or there's a breaking point of how big do you go?
Right.
And that's, you know, what we got to be careful and what we got to watch to sustain, you know, what the whole model is of what we're trying to build.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's cool. I think there's definitely niches out there that you could really focus in that. And that's like the bread and butter and, you know, refocus on that and keep that at site. That's going to be really, really successful. But as far as like, when you show up into a town and, you know, how do you rally a town behind an airline? You know, you're essentially adding another layer of infrastructure into a town. You know, how do you rally a community behind an airline like that? You know, and hopefully that gives, the loyal customer base and, you know, grows the numbers from 1,500 to 15,000 that you said, but it seems like that's a pretty incredible task.
Well, the big thing is being a family-owned operated business and thinking small business, you know, what's your real, you know, your rural communities, what are they? Family, small businesses operating, for many years, you know, through generations. So we try to go in and we try to become part of that community, the chamber, the Rotary. I mean, we join every type of group that there is in a town, and we prove to them that we actually want to become a local business partner. And whether your legacy partners are just unable to do that because they're just too big and their network is way too large to be able to do that in every community. So that's what makes us, unique about going into a new community is just doing everything we can to show the business groups, the hospitals, anything that has a tie to the community. We go meet with them one-on-one. We talk to them and tell them about our services and, we introduce them to our service and promotions. So once they try us, the biggest, sales piece that works in these communities is word of mouth. It's just like, it's like a cancer. When one starts and it's all and who's talking, but typically when it takes off, it just explodes.
Why would anyone not be positive about an airline coming to town? Why would anyone say, no, we don't need it?
These communities that we are trying to service have been so abused and neglected. We're talking since deregulation.
Sure.
That they, you know, why are you different, Shane? You know, everybody else has been through here. Just lie to us and leave. You know, what makes you different? Well, I do what I say I'm going to do. The company does everything it says it's going to do, and we stand behind it. And I think that once they see that, you know, it takes some time. Decatur and Burlington, Iowa, we're coming up on 3.5-4 years being there. and they love us because we have proved to them that everything we set up front is happening as far as being loyal to them as a vendor, and to the passengers in the community and to the community itself. So that's going to be a big piece in our success, is maintaining that feel that we currently have in our communities. It's going to be tough. I'm not saying it's a big challenge.
Right.
But we're hoping that we can market that or package that and let it grow with us.
Huh. That's cool. It's like I've never really heard an airline take ownership of you know, being a business partner in a town. You know, this is like, you know, you sit here growing up in Chicago, you know that, you know, it's almost a commodity. You know, there's so many flights, you know, out of Chicago, you go anywhere in the world. There's a lot of different airlines, and it's just, that's what it is. It's a commodity. But, you know, for a community that's been neglected and things like that, I don't know. I think that's, have you ever, Mark, heard of an airline, you know, showing up in town being a true business partner?
This is an education for me tonight. You know, I didn't even think about it. I just figured, all right, if someone will just make their service available and, you know, if you show up, people will use it. And I don't think about the competition again, maybe because I've always lived in larger cities, the St. Louis, the Chicago, Iowa City. Well, maybe not Iowa City.
Right.
But to me, it's just something that was there and I never thought how it got there and all the effort. So
yeah,
like I say, an education for me tonight.
Yeah, definitely. I know that's really cool. And to hear an approach like that where, you know, you can really affect people and make their life easier. You know, once that does happen, I'm sure you're right. It's the word spreads quickly.
Matter of fact, you know, I want to do a fly out to Decatur now for our flying club.
Yeah, where we all, how about we ride in the back of a caravan?
Yeah, I want to say, you know what? I have seen, and maybe I should ask the question, but I've seen the advertisements from Cessna over the years, and they're very executive-like. So is that how yours are outfitted? It's kind of like first class?
We have a couple interiors going right now. We have the Oasis, which is the executive interior.
Nice.
We have a Capital, interior that's also executive. Then we have one aircraft that's a straight commuter. But that's been one of the selling points is first class VIP service. So it's, you know, the phone number is 1-866-435-IFLY-VIP.
Nice.
So
say that again. I was writing it down.
866-435-IFLY-VIP, which is 9847. So it works pretty good. I mean, that was one of the marketing things kind of sold. I think it's on your brochure also. But we want everybody to feel like a first class passenger.
Right.
On a small aircraft, which is pretty awesome. We haven't had anyone not want to get on the aircraft, which is awesome, over the last several years. So once they experience it, it's I think the gal today riding up, one of the passengers, said, "You're my favorite airline."
Oh, nice. I gotta love that.
So, she didn't know who I was, but, it was pretty awesome to hear. And the pilots, they liked that too. They grinned on that one. So, it's exciting to hear the comments and see I get a lot of emails, customer service emails as far as good and bad, mainly good. We have a few bad because we're not perfect. I don't think there's anyone can be.
Nope.
But, we do our best. We strive for perfection. And we're hoping that we can take that with us in the future.
Yeah. Oh, that's outstanding. I think that's got to be a pretty good feeling. Now, you know, being, you know, since you were at the start of this company and you've seen so much change in aviation, your own career, you know, the industry and your company, you know, do you think you ever would hear, you know, back in 1979, do you think you would have ever heard, a customer say, "This, you're my favorite airline"?
Believe it or not, I think it was in the mid-90s, because as you both know, we're highly regulated by the DOT and the FAA. And what I think I said in 1995, I believe it was, for some reason, I said I never want to be an airline. But lo and behold, here we are today. And like I said earlier, it just mainly happened by default from the one of the charter programs, the share flight program that we started. It's a regulatory issue that was probably toward the side of safety or more compliance, if you will, of just heading to total schedule. Because once you go to scheduled operations under our current Part 135 that we operate under what they call the FAR's Federal Aviation Regulations. Part 135, unlike your legacies operating under Part 121, and the reason we can do that is we're operating aircraft under 9 seats or less. So we're excited about that little niche right now to get a jump start to allow us to go to more seats at some point, which will then put us into the Part 121 spectrum. So that kind of gives us a feel for the requirements of building the infrastructure needed to sustain 121 operations.
That seems to me it's got to be a lot more expensive being 121 when you start talking about, you know, all the same stuff that the legacies have to put up with. We got some pilot ADD. Everyone just looked outside. but it seems so. I assume the reason why you would want to do that, not does it only does it take more expense, but now you have more seats, more revenue, and that works to your favor, right? That's the reason for wanting to make that move.
Correct. To just spread try to get to all the as many seats as possible to operate these communities that we need to. The ideal aircraft that we're seeking will be 30 seats or more.
Wow.
The aircraft hasn't been chosen yet for the next phase of that being 121. We're probably a little ways away from that right now, but we're hoping that there'll be an aircraft available that will make this niche work for us cost-wise and even operational, because the big thing is, that's why we're in a Cessna Caravan, is dependability and reliability.
Yep.
If we start messing up at all, we're going to lose everything we gained with our ridership, because it's the stories you hear over the last few years. What I've heard is from passengers is like, you know, the last airline, they never showed up.
You know, they
canceled.
That's not a good thing.
No.
Yeah. Not that they were late. Oh, they just didn't show.
Yeah. We had some of that too. They say they were late as well, but. You know, when you're a business traveler or you want to get somewhere, that's why you're flying, you know, time to spare, go by air. and they, pretty much, you know, they want to be on schedule. So if we meet that and we maintain that, then that's what's bringing them back.
I just think that you just described kind of the risk. I'm thinking ahead to a 30 place airplane and say, okay, now it's all coach. Where today it may only be 8, but it's executive. And to me, maybe I'm different. I like the idea of getting my own little personal airplane and being treated like an executive. And
yeah,
that's better going than sitting in American Airlines, even though I got 2 million miles on them.
We're hoping that we can develop that feel, maintain that feel through our growth. We're hoping. We don't want to lose that if all possible, but it's hard to maintain, you know, that seating when you're going to larger aircraft. And the amenities are great, but finding the passengers, you know, wanting to pay for those is the difficult thing. So it's, you know, it's that getting the right price structure, you know, for the right service.
Yeah.
I think that's nice, you know, and Mark, I would agree with you on that point that if you get in a small airplane and it's all, you know, tricked out with the leather seats and it's something a little bit different than what you see on the airlines, it's like, oh, this is something special.
Well, then you feel like you're living as the other half lives.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not just on an airline. I'm on my corporate airplane.
Right.
So now you know how my brain works. Right? I don't know that other people think that way, but it's because I'm used to sitting in a 4-seat, 310 horse airplane, piston engine, and I know when I get into something with a PT6 on it, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. It is cool.
I'm thinking of my wife, Shane. My wife and I had the opportunity to go down. We're visiting my other son in Kansas City, And I was supposed to take a Beechcraft Bonanza, had a hydraulic brake leak. And so the guy that I was going to rent from said, hey, we're taking a PC-12. Why don't you just go with us in that? With the owner, and my wife got to sit in the back, and my fear was she's never going to get in a four place again or in an airliner because, again, it's sitting like an executive. So that's why I think the Caravan just sounds so cool.
Well, the biggest challenge is any airline has is, you know, when you and Al travel on the airlines, you know, what's the first thing you're looking for?
An aisle seat?
To get off, I don't know.
What's the number one thing, you know, you go to Expedia, Orbitz?
Oh, price. Yeah.
Boom. So right. It's finding the strategy or the challenge for any business, sure. Of course, is that price point that we will be able to be profitable to stay in business, but yet draw the crowd. And that's a very challenging thing in the airline industry. But that's why the seats, getting more seats is going to be so much
more. Sure, it makes sense. Crucial. Although in your site, you said may have a different price than if you go through an Orbitz, but the prices on your site are they what
we
you
have
pay?
we have a web fair pricing, and then we have the global distribution or the online travel agencies pricing.
So I went to your site, airchoice1.com. And from here to St. Louis with taxes, like $104 each way. That seems to be very competitive.
We believe it is.
Yeah.
There's a stop, of course. You got one stop between here and St. Louis.
Which is great because you get to have another takeoff and landing. Yeah. And if you're lucky, an engine start. I love the PT6.
Yeah. The stop, I mean, how long would the stop be?
20 minutes, I'm looking right here.
20 minutes on the ground.
20 minutes. So that's not bad. That's not too bad at all.
No.
And compared to driving, you know, it's $100 in gas and,
6 hours to Chicago to St. Louis, right. at posted speeds. Or not saying everyone does that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, one thing we're gaining in these rural communities is they say Decatur, you know, those folks, it's 2 hour drive to St. Louis. And what they're finding out is with the local airport, Decatur Airport or Burlington, is the fact that it's free parking. So they start doing the calculations of the free parking, possibly overnight, a hotel overnight stay in St. Louis because of the flight schedule, you know, that they want to get out. And so they really, over the years now, they've really start, and that's why they're considering Air Choice One. And the reason I think the confidence is there, because the community, you know, we've been there, like I said, 3.5-4 years almost. The community is, the word of mouth is like, yeah, they're there. Air Choice One actually shows up and flies the flights.
That's just amazing to me that your predecessor could choose not to show up. How does that happen?
A lot of times, you know, I can't speak.
Sure, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
But a lot of times they have crew issues. Maintenance issues, and what they end up doing is taking that spare aircraft and spare crew and putting it in one of their better markets. So if Decatur is not one of their good one of their good cities, you know, they're moving those airplanes around to their better markets.
So you mentioned, do you have something else? Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
You mentioned crew, and I wanted to kind of shift the subject here.
So there's a, if I think I know where you're going, we just got a tweet.
All right, tell me more.
Some pilot was asking, how many aircraft are in the fleet? And then two, are they hiring pilots?
Good question. Currently we have 5 aircraft in the fleet. And yes, we are seeking, pilot in command applicants, captains, and, first officers.
All right, excellent. So what does it take to be, either a pilot in command or first officer?
Well, the pilot in command, requirements right now is, preferably 2,000 total time, with an ATP written, preferably, or an ATP. And, for the FOs, the lowest right now, our standards is about 1,000 hours, total time, but we will consider applicants lower than that.
Excellent.
I know I'm thinking of someone that really wants to get into it. I may have to go a little bit more for, I don't know if he's got
you?
No. I'm thinking of, if it was me. He doesn't want to hire me. I'm too old. I'm thinking of a young man in his 20s that lives out in L.A.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
yes.
He would just love to get a gig like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he might be moving back to Chicago next couple of months, so.
Yeah.
Well, matter of fact, I just tweeted him and I said, you better be listening. He's actually working right now. I said, he'll either get home and listen tonight or he'll listen to it on the archive tomorrow.
Great.
So excellent. He's a really good guy. I hope that would be fun for him to get on with Air Choice One.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Oh, that's good. So, and, we were talking about, how the schedule works for an Air Choice One pilot. And it's pretty cool. I think it's a kind of an advanced system for kind of maybe the size that you guys are, but but it mirrors a lot like a regular, a Southwest or United Airlines on, line bidding. And, quality of life is a pretty big issue for pilot. And it sounds like it's dialed in to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, we believe so. We've had it now for a few years, but basically we do the line bid system. We build the lines every month. And we give the group, the captains get their line bids, and then the FOs get their line bids. Throw in, I think we asked for 3 lines, and depending on hire dates, seniority, we go off of that, employee numbers, and we award them accordingly to like a legacy, basically, probably. But right now, looks like the working days for any of our pilots is roughly 15 to 18 days a month, so the rest of the days are off. So we do have a requirement that we have to attain to is the 34 hours of flight time in a 7-day work period. They have to have 1 24-hour period off a week in a 7-day period. So, we have criteria that we have to, mm-hmm. or rules, I should say, rules is a better word.
Right.
That we have to go by as well. So, so when you start flying a number of hours, we're doing roughly fleet wide right now. We're doing about 10,000 hours a year fleet wide in our operations.
Right.
So that's a lot of time to cover.
That sure is. That sure is. I mean, that's
how many overnights? I shouldn't say it like that. Are just in percentage? Do they usually get home? So they're flying to St. Louis and back, and they end up, let's say they were based in Chicago or wherever the home base is. Will they be there at night, or is there some overnight involved as well?
Currently, our only pilot base right now is St. Louis.
Okay.
We do have overnights in Burlington, Iowa, and Jonesboro, Arkansas. But basically, depending on what line you bid, how many nights you stay overnight, in a month. But I think an average week, is three nights a week. That's about it. And all other, if you don't bid those lines and you bid out and backs, then you're home every night.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty sweet.
See, that's that quality of life you were mentioning. And,
yeah.
And, I'm one that always likes to be at home, and I'll fly red eye and things like that. So that's important, people. It's worth compensation.
Right.
It equals compensation.
Yeah absolutely. Now, Shane, over the years and everything, you've kind of had a career as being an entrepreneur in aviation, and you're a pilot yourself and all that. But what's it like to have a business and grow a business in aviation?
Well, the key word that comes to first my mind is challenging.
Yeah, I imagine.
That's funny. That's pretty consistent throughout throughout aviation.
Very challenging. Again, I gotta, point out the passion. You've gotta have the passion, the desire to try to build something. It's a lot of work, a lot of endurance, a lot of patience. To leave a legacy, I guess, is the main thing. The main driver for me is trying to leave a legacy for either my kids or the next generation or for somebody. And to look back and say, wow.
Yeah.
And say that upside down, mom.
Yeah, right.
So it's pretty exciting. you know, to see what we've accomplished so far in the scheduled operations. To be in Chicago here is just amazing.
Yeah, Terminal 3 I see here.
And the folks have told me, you know, originally when I pursued Chicago Space, said there's no way, Shane, you're going to get in Chicago. And that was everybody from a lot of the regional partners to some of the legacies. And I didn't know it couldn't be done.
Right.
So that's the driving point of call me crazy maybe, but, you know, it's like Lincoln, you know, how many times did he run for president, you know, before he won?
Right.
So it's really, the entrepreneurship is what you find in a lot of folks, you know, you hear they want to start a business.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, you really think so? Do you understand how much time and effort that's going to take? And they think they do until, you know, maybe a year into it.
Yeah.
Or 6 months sometimes. But, again, it goes back to having that passion for what you're going to build or grow. I think Mark, you know, is a good salesman. He's been talking about selling and stuff. And it's like a salesman. You got to really enjoy selling. And a salesman usually can sell most anything, correct?
Well, if you believe in it, right? To me, it's the skills are there, but if I'm not passionate about my product or service, then I'm not a very good salesperson because I won't be able to, your customers see, your prospects see whether you love what you do or you don't.
And in the background that we've had or I've had over the years is, you know, it's been basically building a business is interviewing for a job. Every time you go out to try to get a new customer, it's really what it's been. And it's just challenging to be able to sell somebody who really don't want you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's a pretty cool thing. You know, I've got a lot of respect for somebody that builds a business in aviation just because one, it's a very up and down industry. And, I don't know, there's just something, yeah, the passion really, you know, carries through. And, you know, it's quite awesome. So nice work.
Thank you.
What's been the biggest positive surprise that happened that you weren't expecting? Let me just go there first.
There's been many, but, probably the biggest one, as far as, you know, the scheduled operations would be actually getting space in Chicago.
Nice. I was going to say something. Every time you say now that we're in Chicago O'Hare, which is awesome, you know, that's a, what's,
were you considering Midway or were you thinking it's either
Midway?
O'Hare?
Yeah, Midway was never an option. It was O'Hare or nothing because the connectivity that an airline, you know, small carrier or regional needs, you got to connect to a hub.
Right.
A very large hub.
Yeah,
to really be successful, because where's people want to go? Anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
As right. Al said. So, that was a big piece, as far as, you know, kind of a time stamp, if you will, of where we're at today. But
how long have you had that Terminal 3 slot or space?
We moved in, January 2010.
Cool.
That's very cool.
So what was the process of getting that? You know, I'm sure that that's got to be, yeah, now you're chuckling, which has got to be a very coveted spot.
How much rejection can you take?
Yeah.
How many times can you be told no? That's, it was very, overwhelming. I mean, again, you know, quitters don't win, winners don't quit. And again, they told me, well, Shane, you just didn't think it could be, you just think it couldn't be done, you know.
Right.
Or could be done. You didn't know it couldn't be done, is what I'm saying. But, it was just a lot of, visiting, a lot of, knocking on doors. The phone didn't work. If anyone out there has worked with the, city of Chicago, it's a one-on-one type thing, to get things going. So we, very fortunate. We had some, people, you know, jump in at the last minute and help us. Delta Airlines was one of those folks that ran into a Delta guy that pretty much the properties guy for Delta. Pretty much, he told me no for the first few times, but the very last time, as I kept doing the circle, around all the folks. He finally said, it's your lucky day. So there was a transition period there that there was just a small window of opportunity that Air Choice One was there at the window and you got to go through. So.
And what was in it for Delta? Just they wanted to give up a gate? Or?
No, Delta basically, when the merger of Northwest and Delta was taking place, as you know, you said earlier that, you know, you knew Delta was Concourse L over at O'Hare for 50 plus years. So basically Delta, when the merger came over or came through with Northwest, they were moving over to the old or to the Northwest gates and terminal two.
Mm-hmm.
I believe no, terminal three. Concourse no terminal
Chose two.
Yeah. Concourse
G or
E or F.
Could be E or G.
Yeah. And
or F or
yeah, F, I think.
Yeah, F. Yeah. Is that horrible? I forget. It's F and G for sure.
For
terminal two. It's E, F, and
yeah,
G.
E and F.
E and
G
F.
Is, I believe, is American.
No, that's H and K. Could be, no, oh, it could G, be G and terminal
for
two.
American
yeah.
Airlines.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep,
or
yep,
that
right.
American Eagle. Yeah.
Yep. Glad we solved that problem of the world.
Yeah, we should all had our chart out on that one.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, wherever the old Northwest gates were, and then so Delta was sitting there with all that real estate, was going to, you know, they had a 100-year lease.
Wow.
So about the time that we were coming up, there was a window of opportunity that Delta came across that was able to sublease to, they were subleasing to us and Spirit Airlines. And I believe Alaska, there was just a few, and Air Choice was able to come in at the right time. The space we needed was perfect, a perfect fit for Delta at the time. And then about a year and a half later, the city of Chicago has taken over that terminal now. So city of Chicago leases out the space there in Concourse L, which is pretty much all used up at this point now. So we're back to landlocked at O'Hare. So Air Choice One was just in there in the nick of time to get the space needed to have operations.
Well, and you say nick of time, but I'm hearing, and this is now my sales side kicking in, you were in their face, and when they were in the mood to say yes, you were there because you hadn't walked away and saying and given up, right?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah. That is exactly right.
Alston, now tomorrow I'm going to go back to the office, and everyone that's told me no, I'm going to start calling them again. They're going to hang up on me a few times, but
you got to be able to handle rejection, and a good salesman, I guess, does. So, but it was a lot of trauma sometimes on me because the mental anguish that sometimes plays on you. It's like what the and so but you just keep going.
Yeah, that's all you can do.
That's the entrepreneurship. I mean, that's where it makes or breaks you, you know. Just because you were told no, or you're going to quit, you know, and you just got to keep going. So,
right.
I think a lot of, success of where we're at today is, I guess, me being hard-headed or whatever. But, it's exciting, what's taken place just through the hard work.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard, and I've heard them all. Quitters don't win and winners don't quit. Have you heard that?
Yeah. You know what? I was actually thinking, no, I haven't.
And I've heard tough times don't last, tough people do. That kind of thing. So I like that. Quitters don't win and winners don't quit. I like that.
Yeah. That's nice.
Let me write that down.
Can we coin that? We're going to coin that on Simple Flight.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. You got it.
Royalty payments coming our way.
Yeah. No, that's a pretty big feat. You know, while you're sitting here describing that story, I'm just like, wow, that's to have a gate, you know, and work hard at it at the, you know, world's largest airport. It's like, there's something cool.
Actually, it's not the world's largest.
It's a fourth?
Fourth in the world, second in North America.
Busiest
or large? It certainly isn't one of the large, not the largest, but busiest. Atlanta's bigger, or busier.
Yeah, Atlanta's number one, Chicago's number two.
There are times.
Now, in the world, if you Google the world, I believe Chicago, last time I checked, was fourth in the world.
Except during the last week in July, and then they're fifth. Because Oshkosh is number one during that week.
Yeah. I thought they went back and forth between, Atlanta. Like, one day it's Atlanta, the other day it's
That's true. I think there are days that Chicago is busier, but for operations in a year, Atlanta is number one.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But there are times.
Bummer. I want O'Hare to win.
I know. You know, it's funny. Now I really digress, but I remember growing up being proud of everything that was Chicago, you know, number one, this. They had, this is no joke, at the Greyhound bus terminal in Chicago, the world's busiest payphone. I remember reading about that. Yeah, Chicago, go! Woo!
That's awesome.
Yeah, now probably the only payphone. Do they still have payphones?
Yeah, it's probably still the world's busiest.
I believe I've seen a few here and there, payphones still.
The smartest thing I know is that I actually had to use one once when I was commuting back from Washington, D.C. I had to call my parents to pick me up, but I had lost my cell phone or something at a terminal in Charlotte, and I had to use a payphone. But you know what always awesome is that they took credit cards.
Yeah, well, the way I remember, I used to have a limo service pick me up at O'Hare, and you didn't have to put coins in if it was an 800 number.
Really?
So all the guys and gals would get off the plane. You go to the payphone bank while you're waiting for your luggage. If you happen to check, 800, I still remember the number. We'll be there in 8 to 10 minutes.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. So I asked you about the positive. I think I've already heard it here, but in terms of surprises on the downside, negative side, something just totally caught you off guard that you weren't expected, and again, kind of was a negative thing for you. Anything come to mind? He's thinking.
Must not have been that bad. But
yeah.
The key, I mean, the challenge, I was going to say struggle, but to building a great company is finding great people.
Yep.
And I think that as far as disappointments, it's been mainly in people over the years. You know, they say they want to be part of something, and, you know, short period after that, it's like, oh my God, this is a lot of work. And that's probably been one of my major disappointments, and it might not be fair, but people, because the airline industry takes people.
Yep.
You got to have a lot of people in the infrastructure working it, but we do have a good group, you know, working with us now, and today it's just, you know, for continued growth, let's just keep finding those key people.
And do you employ mechanics and baggage handlers, or those services you outsource?
We do outsource some stuff, but then other states, like here in Chicago, we outsource above wing and below wing.
Yep.
But we do have our own mechanics. We've got our own reservations, in-house. Pilots, of course, we got our own pilots. And in our outstations, we have our own people. We call them, you know, CSAs.
Yep, customer service agents. Yep.
But then St. Louis, we also sub out. So,
how about do any of the planes have flight attendants, or is that a dual role from the cockpit?
The pilots are the flight attendants.
Yep.
They're pretty much everything. But the gate agents or the CSAs pretty much take care of the luggage, you know, as a major airline. But inside the cockpit, the crew does the briefings and the emergency briefings and safety briefings, which is really personable. You know, back to the old days, you know, flying back when, you know, it was all mechanical or there was no automation. So it puts them in tune. I mean, the passengers, I think it even gives them more of a comfort zone, if you will, you know, with the passengers because they're like interacting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, unlike, you know, today's, you know, locked, you know, steel door, for safety, which, you know, we've been asked, over the last couple of years, well, what's going to keep somebody from attacking, you know, a crew member? Well, we go through security just like anyone else. And if we do have awareness in our training, if we see a problem prior to boarding, with an individual, you know, we'll take action, whatever's needed. But, so far, you know, there's been no incident of that of ever happening. And we hope that stays that way.
Absolutely.
You know, I think you can, the awareness with the TSA screening and everything that we have to do as a carrier pretty much will prevent that.
I think of Flying Wild Alaska.
Yeah.
And that, how they built it up, and they have caravans and others, and it, I don't know if you take this as a compliment. I mean it as a compliment. It sounds very much like the same type of operation. You know, the families, everyone's involved, everyone's, you know, committed to that customer experience, and we got to get them to where they're going because ultimately that's the value they expect from us.
No, that's a very fair comment. I think it fits very well in where we're at today. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's nice. It's, I think that, you know, it must mean a lot when you show up at a new town and you can, you know, you show up and you say that, hey, we're going to be a business partner. We're not just here to take you on vacation. You know, we're here for legitimate purpose and things like that. I think that's the care of a family. You know,
yeah.
The family oriented stuff. If you watch the Flying Wild Alaska show, you know, getting people to where they need to be was very important, or getting a part to where they needed to be.
Right.
Because, you know, essentially people would start dying, you know, it was to that extreme, in Alaska, and, you know, towns could start dying, you know, if the airline wasn't there being a legitimate business partner. So it's, I think that like the care of a family and, you know, that personal touch is just, you know, that's really essential, and maybe that's even the niche.
So how do you pick out the next city or the next group of cities? Is there certain attributes you look for to say this is strategic to us in the long term?
That's correct. What we're trying to focus on is feeding our current hubs, St. Louis and Chicago. So anything, we try to draw a circle around these hubs, these two hubs, within a 200 to 300 mile radius. 300 is kind of pushing it in the caravan, but we do look at some of the markets. We're currently looking at some Arkansas markets to feed St. Louis down at Harrison, Arkansas, to feed into St. Louis and Memphis. We feel that we're strong enough to just focus on the central United States, Midwest region, if you will, for right now. The main thing is we want to get strong, what we consider to get strong in our backyard before venturing out into the woods.
So it's not necessarily new hubs, but fed by the existing hubs is the things you're looking for next?
Correct. We feel that some of the rural communities that we're currently servicing, growing into larger aircraft down the road, will be a good stopping point from a different point. Say, you know, for example, Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, being an Army post, you know, Fort Leonard Wood, Decatur, Illinois, Chicago, or Fort Leonard Wood, you know, Columbia, Missouri, Chicago. So mainly trying to build the network to a point, again, not to reinvent the wheel, but to find that niche that used to work in the old day for the smaller, you know, carrier, well, even the legacies today, that we can sustain a service and still be profitable in these communities. So it's going to be that one-stop shop is what we call it, where, you know, we're going to have one stop to hub at some point, because it's what people, you know, the passenger, the paying public, again, you guys, first word out of your mouth is price. So keeping that price point to where we can keep the ridership up to a profitable level.
And mission aside, is there, I would think there'd be, if you become very, very successful in a certain market, wouldn't the legacies be wanting to make you, you know, the United Express, American Eagle, whatever it is, and bring you under their banner, whatever that entails on their end to make that happen? And how do you, are you in favor of that, or is that something that would be a bad thing?
Hopefully, Air Choice One can become the best kept secret.
Okay.
But if that was to happen, we would consider all avenues. If we become that successful, you know, it'd be a great thing, right?
Right.
But we're hoping that we can build. The goal is to build a strong, independent carrier, because what happens to, as you guys have seen over the years, I think Al mentioned it a while ago about Chautauqua. You know, when those family businesses are ate up by the legacies, we just lost everything we worked for.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, what we were trying to build
right.
as part of the, as being the company. So we hope that building a niche, that we just build a larger independent carrier. And I know it sounds like a pipe dream if there's any airline folks out there listening, but we really believe the economy, the need for travel is going to come back in such a way with the old school, if you remember how they went out and developed business. What do we got to do in the rural communities? We've got to get out to go get the business. Who is that? That's the businesses and the residents of the community. You know, they got to get out.
Right.
If it ain't coming to them, they've got to get out and get it.
Right, right. I think that's I kind of thought of like a shift like that, you know, in the airline model, that you're going to start maybe seeing a lot more of these regional carriers, because all the, you know, like you said, the Chautauquas and, you know, the SkyWest Express Jets and all these little things that are now under one flag, and you know, they're essentially major airlines. The fleets of these things are so modern and they're so huge. You know, they're 20,000 employee companies, and you know, you're not, they essentially grew out of the routes that they were in. Now that's re-neglected the small town population, and you know, they're going to need a new cycle of these. But it's nice to know that, you know, that's where, you know, you're probably going to try to stay, you know, and help these communities be a standalone carrier for that.
Unless Mark just cursed me, I don't know, but
I don't do that. I'm a good luck charm.
We're hoping, you know, that's the case, because there's going to be a niche. There's a niche.
Right.
That's got to stay filled. And I think, you know, what's happened to, you know, the partners of the legacies is, like you said, is the legacies is wants, you know, to control the seating, the pricing of the seats is supply and demand.
Right.
So that's where they're heading, and hopefully, I mean, we get a niche to where we can incrementally increase the seat cost or the seat pricing to the point that it's not noticeable, but yet sustainable for the markets that we want to serve.
Right, sure.
We mentioned a couple times family-run business. Who else is in the business?
Basically in 79, Mom and Dad started it in 79, and right now we have those two, and then me and my sister also became just owners, part owners, just in December 2012. So right now in the family, so there's Mom and Dad, me and my sister, and I have a niece that works for us right now.
Nice. Nice. I like that.
That is cool.
I got to change my last name to Soares.
Yeah.
Come on down.
Yeah. Hey, we got a couple text messages in, and I'll just try to combine it into one here, but do you carry any freight or mail in addition to passengers, and or is there is that a whole nother ball of wax?
That's a whole nother ball of wax with TSA. It takes a cargo program that is quite extensive and expensive to maintain.
Yeah.
Under the new TSA rules. That is on the agenda. That's on our list for growth. Right now we just want to get our seat capacity or our cities up, you know, to where we have a bigger network to grow that, avenue.
Right, right. Yeah, I would imagine that would be such, but, you know, I'm sure as these towns grow with, you know, it'd be interesting to see if there's a direct proportion, you know, as the airline grows in the town, you know, see if the town grows by, you know, checking boxes, and, you know, there could certainly be a need, you know, down the road for that. That sounds awesome. So, but, we got another one and, another text message. Somebody just asked, how much is a new caravan fully equipped as you would need it for the airline?
As I would need it, our price range is 1.7 to 2.1 right now. The new ones, I believe, are coming up on 2.6.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're trying to stay in that price range for our fleet.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Well, that's gotta be pretty cool, you know, to, to operate, you know, one out of O'Hare. Actually, there's a, Mark and I are in this flying club that we mentioned here at the Palwaukee Airport. And one of the gentlemen in our club is air traffic manager at O'Hare. And, you know, it was interesting. Did you ever run into any issues of being like a small little propeller plane, you know, going into a big airport that, you know, really hasn't seen propeller airliners in a while?
Chicago's has just been, the TMU has just been awesome to work with. They've loved us since day one. There's a golf outing that we attend every year with them, and our company call sign is Weber.
Yeah.
If you want to track us on FlightAware, it's Whiskey Bravo Romeo, and we're under the call sign Weber. And basically, we are one of our first meetings that we had in Chicago with TMU and the city officials, you know, safety and all that, was to tell them our profiles that we were going to fly. So basically, we've been told in a caravan to slow down.
Really?
So we have in our training program what we call a large hub, high-speed ILS. And that was mainly produced or developed for our Chicago operations. So we carry basically 170 knots to the marker.
Wow.
inside the marker, you know, we get it to about 140, 150, and all the way to the threshold.
Wow.
So we've never, we may have, in the history we've been operating in Chicago, one or two times had to go around due to traffic on the runway. But we've never, and from what I've heard, never made anybody go around because of us.
Yeah, nice.
So,
yeah, nice.
We're very O'Hare friendly, so yeah. All the controllers, it's kind of funny at this golf outing because they, you know, we wear our Air Choice One shirts and they say Weber, and they call us by our call signs. It's pretty awesome.
That is
very
nice.
Very cool.
Well, great. Well, hey Shane, thanks for coming out and being with us on the show tonight. I think this has been very educational.
Yeah, I guess I just proved how ignorant I am in this industry.
Yeah.
Learning about the stuff.
Yeah.
But certainly I would say persistence is the word I've heard out of this. And, again, quitters don't win and winners don't quit. I like that because that truly shows what you're all about and what your organization's about. So continued success. I'm going to take a flight.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm going to do it.
You guys are to come aboard.
Yeah.
Take us to it. In airliners.net, there's been a few postings on there. If anybody wants to look of an actual passenger videotaping the whole experience from start
where
to finish.
Where was that again?
Airliners.net.
Airliners.
Excellent. We'll have
there's some
up.
Passenger stories that pretty much tell the whole story of their event. They show their boarding pass. It's pretty
cool. I'm going to do that. And then, so everyone, it's Air Choice One at airchoiceone.com, and the phone number is 866-435, or should I say 435?
435.
9847. 866-435-9847. AirChoiceOne.com. Very,
that's,
very cool.
866-IFLY-VIP. Is that right?
That's correct. And
there
awesome.
You go. Except, you know, on so many things, they don't have the letters anymore. You know, I'm actually typing it out, so I would rather just have the number.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's great. But, thank you very much for coming on and being an outstanding.
And actually
person.
Coming up here live.
Yeah.
Instead of so many times we either have to travel that way or we just go on Skype, so it's nice.
Yeah, that was.
That, you
well,
decided.
My thanks goes out to Air Choice One for traveling, you know, maybe travel up here.
Thank
tonight.
You for getting here on time and rested and all of that. It's so good stuff. And then leaving us frisbees and modified Rubik's cubes and things like that. We got quite the tchotchkes.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity and thanks for having us. And looking forward to having you guys on board.
Yeah,
all right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Shane.
Thank
all
you.
Right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm really gonna go do that.
Yeah. No, seriously. You would end up. Actually, my girlfriend and I are going to be flying down, or not flying, but going to St. Louis in a couple of weeks, and I think why not fly?
You should. Matter of fact, you know what I should do? We should make like a little game out of this. I think I'm going to fly. I'll fly to Decatur and catch you when you get there. I'll take a picture of you coming off, then you'll hop in the next leg and you'll go on down and I'll come home.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I have family down in St. Louis. So, getting down there, especially, you know, the old days, I shouldn't say the old days, but previously we'd even think about taking the train, right? If you didn't want to drive. But that just still takes too much time.
Wow. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It was funny because, you know, I said earlier in the show that I would go down to St. Louis all the time for airline training. And, you know, you'd have to get there. You know, I'd end up driving because it was, you know, 4.5 hours. But, you know, you could jump seats. And but jump seating, it became a nightmare. I remember so many times, you know, you're on a 737 or an Airbus trying to get down there. You get either bumped off. And you'd end up driving anyways. You just waste all this time. So why not take a little caravan?
I have to be honest. I've never flown in a caravan.
Neither have I.
I've flown a decent amount of times in a Navajo because when I worked at Iowa City Flying Service back in the 70s, that's what we flew for our charters. But my best airline story, which was almost appalling, flying to St. Louis,
best or worst?
Well, it's kind of, you'll be the judge of it. Here I am flying, and we get there quick. It was scheduled for an hour and a half, and we landed 45 minutes early, and we took off on time. That's what I learned about padding a schedule. I said, how could this? We took off, and we landed 45 minutes. How could you say it was going to take an hour and a half? It's a 45-minute flight. It's 300 miles. We'd go 500 miles an hour. You know, games are you guys playing? So that's a true story, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
That is, I think I remember you telling me that. And, you know, it's,
45 minutes early on an hour and a half flight. It's 90 minute flight. This doesn't
make
sense.
I've got a reverse story for that one. There was the airline that I was flying for bought another airline and they were doing this whole reconfiguration of the schedules and stuff like that. And they had, you know, so this affected, you know, in the airline world, you hear this block time.
Yep.
Block time is is basically what, you know, the airline thinks that based on historical data will take, you know, to fly the flight. But because this was like a new airplanes, new airline, new routes and stuff for the airline, they just basically made up this random number. It wasn't random, but you know, it was very unpadded. You know, if to say the least.
Go with the POH numbers.
Yeah, the POH numbers. So they had, this is what they said. They said that it would take an hour and 5 minutes to fly from Milwaukee to New York LaGuardia, an hour and 10 minutes to fly to Atlanta, and it was an hour to fly from DC to Milwaukee. So I ended up having, you know, as an airline pilot, you can only fly 8 hours in a day. So I got this schedule that was kind of, it was a lot of flying, you know, and we flew from Washington, D.C. to Milwaukee, Milwaukee to LaGuardia and back, Milwaukee to Atlanta and back, Milwaukee to Omaha, all in a day. And, you know, just based on these numbers of, oh, yeah, it's going to take an hour and five or hour and 10 to get to Atlanta or.
And it was more like LaGuardia. 5 hours than one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you end up holding and diverting going into LaGuardia and, you know, it turned into a pretty hefty day.
Ugh. Although that could be a positive thing too if you're PIC.
Yeah.
Not in the back of the airplane. That sucks.
Yeah, right. 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 Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's kind of you know, it's interesting how all these schedules come about for airlines.
Yeah, I'm not a big, I shouldn't say this, but I love flying, but when it comes to the airlines, it's not good when I'm stuck in the back, stuck in a center seat, hungry, you know, all the things I remember, but I this is going to become a downer, so I'll just shut up at that point. And just say, I prefer the commuter, the smaller stuff where there's not so many people. An Air Choice one will be fun. I am going to do it. Flying my stuff, the little, you know, the GA stuff is what I'm all about.
Yeah. No, I think that there's a flexibility and, you know, an element of control, you know, in that. And even like if you're to fly on a smaller airline like the, you know, Air Choice one, you know, you still have a little bit of control over your schedule because, you know that the lines aren't, you know, other than maybe the security line, you know, but that's a blend of all airline passengers. But you know, you're going to get the special one-on-one attention to check in and get, you know, get to the gate.
So if I'm in Terminal 3, I can use my Advantage premium thing to get through the security line faster. I'm sitting first class in Air Choice 1. They're all first class.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
So that's it. But it's kind of interesting. Yeah. The you know, you go for the passenger experience rather than.
That's what I'm all about.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Absolutely. So what are you doing this week? You flying?
Yeah. We're flying down to Bentonville, Arkansas in the King Air.
What's that, Walmart?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe? I'm not supposed to say anything?
Yeah, no, you can say, yeah.
Delivering some bread and pastries or something?
No, it's a, I'm not sure what it is, but yeah, down to Walmart, and a couple other miscellaneous spots along the way.
That's so cool.
What about you?
You know, I don't have anything scheduled, and this weekend, I didn't fly this weekend because we were doing our flying club upgrade, if you will, in the clubhouse, the pilot cave, as it were. And so, I was supposed to fly yesterday at 7 a.m. That didn't happen. Was thinking of flying today, but of course it was Mother's Day and I was with my mom until I had to get prepped for the show. So I guess the bottom line is I'm going to pick out a day and sneak out for a few minutes and do some flying because right now I don't have anything planned until earliest next weekend, and that's bad.
Yeah.
I gotta go up more than that.
Get up, you should take the Sky Arrow up.
Yeah, speaking of which, when are you gonna take it up?
I need to.
You do need to. I mean, it's been a while.
It has been. I'd like to fly it over to Pilot Pete's for lunch.
We should do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Is it next weekend and you want me to fly it to Dubuque for a flyout?
Yes.
You know
which, by the way, I cannot make.
No way.
Way.
How could you reschedule something and not make it?
It's work. We're flying on Saturday.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. So this is interesting. Oops, someone just tweeted us.
Yeah. Yeah. But, it would be kind of.
Oh, good. It is a tweet, but it's something that we can, I'll tell you later.
Yeah. Okay.
Our message.
Yeah.
So, because there's a Young Eagles both at Waukegan Airport, Uniform Golf November up the road a piece,
right,
and Chicago Executive Papa Whiskey Kilo. Both have Young Eagle events. Both have an overwhelming response from kids, and both are understaffed. They're all coming asking, can you guys fly your planes? And we're going to be in Dubuque.
Yeah.
I would think the flying club should support that. And I hate to change things at last minute here, but Is that a possibility? Do you think we should stick with our plans to go to Dubuque?
I don't know. You know,
the Sky Arrow would be a fun Young Eagles plane.
It would be. I don't know. Well, we can figure.
We'll figure that out later.
But But yeah, no, it's it definitely.
Which plane were you taking?
I think I had the Cirrus reserved.
All right. I guess I just might have to take that.
Yeah. Oh, shucks, your favorite airplane.
Yeah, really. Oh, come up with anything. So what time are you, you're leaving on Saturday? You'll be gone all week, including Saturday.
All week, including Saturday.
Will you be back for next week's show?
Yes.
You better be.
Yeah. So we come back on Saturday night.
All right. Oh, that's unusual. You guys don't do too much, Saturday flying. As a matter of fact, it's the first one I've ever seen of yours.
Right. It should be a decent flight, but, I don't know what's going on, but, it's their airplane. They could do whatever they want with it.
Yes, they can.
Yeah. It's awesome.
And when's the last time you were up in the King Air?
It's been a week ago. Not this last week, the week before.
Do you need me to go up and do some recurrency training?
Yeah.
Flare, pull back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it should be good. It's funny because the last trip that I had in the King Air was down in St. Louis before heading out to Chile. So that was pretty cool. Actually, there was something at Spirit of St. Louis that I want to try to figure out what it is. It's like, they must have had an old tower, that's now, they like cut the cab off and put, is like a little observing deck under the, is it what's the big runway there? 20 left or something like that?
It's been a long time, Al.
I can't remember, but, they took like the old tower and like cut the cab off and, you know, planted it in the dirt for a little observation deck or something like that. I don't know. It's, it looks pretty cool. I want to check it out.
You got me going to my four flight.
Yeah. So you have a, it should be pretty cool.
Yeah, you have 2-6 left and right.
2-6 left, that's right. And it's off of 2-6 left on the, if you look to the right-hand side when you land, there's a little tower cap.
I'll look it up. I don't want to take our time now.
Yeah, right.
All right.
But it should be, I thought that was a nice way to recycle a tower.
Yeah, well, did we talk about this in the, we talked about the observation. Looks like a tower at O'Hare, the deck that I grew up with as a kid. We used to go up and sit there and watch airplanes.
Yeah.
The good old days. There were no fences.
The good old days.
Throw $5 on the seat, put the car right in front of O'Hare, and you never had a ticket when you came back, but the $5 was gone. My dad taught me that trick. I was a little kid. He says, yeah, it says no parking, but if you put $5 on the seat, you can park here and right in front of the where you drop off for the arrivals today.
Wow.
Yeah, that's back in the 60s. Yeah, I don't think $5 will do it. Actually, in this day, I don't think anything will do it, and nor should it. It's actually almost embarrassing to admit it, but that was kind of what you did, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we have for next week's show?
We have Andrea from Airfare coming on, and she is on a really cool mission to go to all these different airports with restaurants on them and kind of map them out, review them, and make a
I wonder if Chicago Executive qualifies. We have a restaurant, but no one would ever think of flying here. You can't taxi up to it. You have to drive up into it, right? There's no taxi on.
I think so what you're talking about is Hangar 21?
No, that place that's closed. I don't know what it is. It's that part of the hotel that I've.
Yeah, I think that place closed.
Oh, then it would be really bad to taxi up to there.
Yeah, right. Right. No, but there's a couple good airport fares around here in Chicago, like Clow and Schaumburg Pilot Pete's, which we just mentioned for lunch. An iconic one, unfortunately, just closed.
Keeley's? Well, it wasn't Keeley's, just the Janesville one closed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just said Janesville. I'm going to Janesville, and it's like, oh, man.
I asked the guy, by the way, I flew up to Janesville, if not, I guess it wasn't this past week, it must have been the week before. I asked the tower guy, I said, yeah, it's quiet since they closed, but, you know, they were confident that because it's such a great training airport that they won't be hurt too much. I tend to disagree, but.
Yeah.
It's I also asked if he was going to stay open, and they were hopeful.
The tower.
Yeah, I'm thinking, one, they haven't made final decision on the contract towers yet, have they?
I heard something on Twitter, I believe. And this
oh, then it must be true.
Yeah, it's on the internet. It's real. No, but somebody, I think I heard something that said that the contract towers will stay open, that was canceled. But I don't know, I was out of the country when I saw it, so I didn't really look more into it. So I was hoping that you would, but, we'll have to take a look on that and see. If anybody really knows the official answer, please feel free to tweet it in.
Yeah. Speaking of tweets, I'm getting a whole bunch of them here. Why wait till the end of the show and they're like, flooding in. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's awesome.
That's an exciting show next week though.
Yeah, I think it's cool. It's kind of highlights that this is an industry, even down to the restaurant business, you know, aviation exists. And, somebody had posted a picture of a airport, restaurant that I really want to try. It's at Fort Lauderdale Executive, FXE. And, it just looked really outstanding. I mean, like, you know, there's some of these places that you go to for airport restaurants, and they're like greasy spoon places, right? You know, it's just like, okay.
That's good though.
It is, but it isn't. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, you show up and you get the hash browns that like come out of a bag and stuff like that.
That's not fair.
Which are good. I mean, they've got their purpose, but it seems like that's what every airport restaurant is, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great answer.
Hey, I'm a man of few words.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a, but, you know, so she's kind of going after the ones that, that are the greasy spoons, but are the high quality ones with, like, you know, new, like, you know, legitimate, you know, formally trained chefs and stuff like that.
And there's a few out there, and
there are.
Matter of fact, I don't know if it's still current, but when the $100 hamburger book came out, things like Pilot Pete's got very, very high ratings.
What's that?
Pilot Pete's got a high rating from the $100 hamburger book.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested as we talk to our guest next week if, you know, have the rankings change, what's kind of up and coming, what's down and out and those kinds of things. But I still like going, and it's been a while, to Lone Rock. Have you been out there?
You know what? I've never been there.
Lima November Romeo. It's just an old, probably as you would call it, greasy spoon at the end of the runway. And a pancake that you can only eat one, fills up the plate really thick, and it's great. I mean, that's pilot,
yeah,
pilot
that
heaven.
That is pilot food. It's like pancake is the official breakfast of, airport diners.
There you go. Like about that. The week after, I think is that the one I'm working on?
Yes, you are.
Let's not pre-announce a guest, but it should be a great guest. He's agreed. I just want to confirm the date and time with him. And then what do we, that'll take us into June, right? God, I can't believe how fast things are going now.
Yeah.
Seriously. What do we got going in the first part of June?
There is the first part of June on, our very first show in June, we have a big announcement to make. Nice. Ground Effect Advisors.
That's right. The Flying Club Scholarship. And the Flying Club Scholarship applications closed on the 1st of May with 126 applications in, spanning some approximately 35 states, which just to me just shows how much interest is out there.
Yeah.
And there are 126 apps, and they were all very good. I got to see all of them actually.
Yeah. I did too. I think it's pretty exciting seeing. You know, getting in.
I just got an email. We're talking about someone wanting to start a flying club. How about that?
Wow.
He doesn't even listen to this radio show. He just sent me a note though. Wanted some help on it. Is that funny?
That is funny.
Yeah.
And then at the one after that, we're going to have, Tyson Weiss, the founder and, CEO of 4Flight on the show.
And by then I'll have my ADS-B. I ordered my ADS-B antenna yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, for the 4Flight. The Stratus 2.
Did you get your own? Or is this for the Flying Club?
It's for the Flying Club.
Right.
But I'm going to be the first one to use it.
You know what's funny is that on this whole flight, we didn't have, down to Chile, we didn't have any weather, onboard weather. And, you know, you think like, okay, XM, why does, you know, we need XM. Well, XM doesn't really work outside the U.S. And then you have,
ADS-B wouldn't it?
No, because that's all ground sensors.
Oh.
So then, so it's just like, there's nothing. You had to get back on the...
Did you run into any weather?
Yes, actually.
Tell me more.
Well, it was, we were actually flying in the U.S. down through Tennessee. We didn't have any onboard weather. So it's this old air, working with air traffic control and them giving you vectors through it. And then, actually there was another time we were over the North Pacific, in Colombian airspace. And, it was funny because, you know, trying to find weather products for international airspace is a little difficult. So we were on weather.com looking at a global satellite picture.
That's funny.
And, trying to figure out, you know, where the storms would be. And, you know, sure enough.
But you had storms leaving the U.S. that you had to like navigate around? Or,
yeah.
Really? So I have this is like the question I can't believe I've been asked. What happens, if anything, when you cross the equator?
I have a movie of it.
You didn't answer the question. What happens if any, does the compass move? I know the toilet spins a different direction. Of course, not when you're peeing into a bottle, but.
Yeah. I got a movie of that too. I was for my
that
own
one
reason.
I definitely don't want to see. No, I mean, I know you don't see a little dotted line in the ocean, but I'm just wondering if, if something, because everything kind of changes direction, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know if there'd be different compass errors and all
that.
That's
that's one thing that happened. So like we had a, our, as soon as we crossed the equator, our AHARS started acting up. So I lost.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
At that point.
Well, not, I don't know if this was triggered by, you know, it all happened south of the equator. And, our AHARS, on both airplanes.
On both airplanes.
Started acting up.
Like what? What'd they do?
It just, it would lose all of its, like, magnetometer.
I wonder if that, find out. I want to know.
Yeah, we're trying to figure that out because we're so baffled by it, and it almost happened at the same
time. And it happened at the same time in both airplanes?
Yeah.
By the way, were you able to talk plane to plane? Were you doing that a lot?
Yeah. But there was, it was interesting, because, you know, we were a partial panel at that point, right?
Right.
Over the ocean, and then I'm like, okay, in the United States, you hear UNOS for compass errors, undershoot north, overshoot south, and I'm like, what about the southern hemisphere?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. What did, I was going through my head with you. I was thinking, okay, are the compass errors are opposite? What changed? Because I've never even thought about
that. Yeah, it never occurred to me until, you know, you're sitting there. But no, it's, we had that. And then to answer your other question about talking, air to air to each other, there was a lot more of, there was a lot of air to air talk, just trying to figure out, you know, when we talked to air traffic control and we asked the question three times, please repeat. And, you know, he would, you know, we would just switch to the other radio and say, okay, did you catch what he said? What did he say?
Were you on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Yeah.
See, that's not even legit, but there's other air to air, but everyone uses that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Is that funny? Yeah. So you guys probably became friends over, the course of 20 some hours.
We did.
And were you, how close were you? Wingtip to wingtip?
Yeah, almost, but on top of each other, but with 2,000 feet difference. We'll get into all that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I am so excited about that trip. We'll get into it.
Great. Well, anyway, great show tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks to our guest, Shane.
Yes,
at,
thank you.
Air Choice One, airchoice1.com.
Absolutely.
And good to see you back in the old US of A. Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Especially now that I got someone to help me pay for dinner.
Right.
All right. And we thank everybody out there listening. We was glad you could join us for this evening. Tweet us, talk to us, send us email, send us fan mail. We'd love to hear from you. And suggestions for future shows is always appreciated.
Very good.
So until next week, to everyone, blue skies.
And very strong tailwinds.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.